Monkey Radio with Tom and Ramon. We are recording this on September 6th of 2014. And, I don't think I've had... actually, it was last weekend that I took that class, Ramon, so I guess I haven't announced to our audience here yet that I went through the Reiki training last weekend and did Reiki 1, 2, and 3. And, wow, I had some amazing experiences there, Ramon. Despite the, just everything that I learned about Reiki, and, if you'll notice, I still haven't decided whether or not I want to call it Reiki or Reiki.
I could tell you the Japanese pronunciation.
What is the Japanese pronunciation?
Reiki.
Reiki?
Reiki.
Reiki. Okay. So, anyways, the process for becoming a Reiki healer is you are actually given symbols by a master or a Reiki master. They attune you to these certain symbols, which actually kind of open things up within you to be able to flow that energy. Now, when they were getting ready to give the first attunement, talking to the guides and the masters, et cetera, when they started doing, talking to them and basically calling them in for their assistance, I was hit with like four or five waves of energy that were really dynamic. I mean, just amazing. It covered me with goosebumps from head to toe. And this lasted for a good solid minute. And it was laced with all sorts of other information when that was happening. You know, there was stuff that I'm still unpacking. Confirmation, support, the reality of the process was impressed upon me. And after that happened, and we went through and started working actually using the Reiki energy, I found that the palms of my hands, I've played around with energy for quite a while here, and I talk about it on the show. You know, I don't know how many shows I've talked about it, but
every single one.
Oh, pretty close, yeah. But the palms of my hand now, since I got this attunement, there are circles on my palms that the energy starts flowing, it actually feels like a circle on my palm. And it is palatable. It is tangible. The way the energy is flowing is absolutely undeniable. Now, prior to doing this, you know, I messed around with energy healing and projecting energy and that sort of thing in the past. And I've been able to sense the energy flow. I've been able to sense an actual movement, a physical sensation of movement of the energy, but it was so subtle that I had to rely on more of my intuition and that subtle feeling for a confirmation that it was actually going and it is actually working. But since that attunement, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind now that when I open this up, it's absolutely amazing and dynamic. It's like turning and it's like opening up a faucet now. So I turn it on and it's just blasting, and then I actually turn it off. There's an on and off switch with this stuff. So I found that, well, you know, I can turn it on and then I'll talk about whatever, you know, just go about my, you know, blah, 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 while I'm working on somebody, you know, not necessarily focusing on trying to flow the energy, but all the time it's just blasting out of my hands. So anyway, enough about that, I suppose. It was an amazing experience. And I went through, it was a weekend crash course intensive, 16 hours, and came out of it with my Reiki 3, and I'm very happy I did it. I'm very glad I did it. Another element. Ramon? You muted? Ramon?
Yeah, sorry, I was talking with the mic muted. Yeah, it sounds really exciting, Tom, to get that done.
I've definitely been looking forward to it. I'm glad I did it, though.
Yeah. So I have something from the exopolitics.org here, and it's just basically them, it's a little news article, I believe. Michael Sala wrote that. Did I get cut off? Hello?
I'm here. I just muted my mic.
Oh, okay. I thought I was cut off there. So, really quickly, just basically about how we're finding all these different planets all over the place and how some of them may even have water. And, you know, he posted, like, a picture of a reptilian, the Pleiadian, the tall whites, Nordic, and the Greys, and how just, you know, those people who said that they've seen them, experienced things with them, how they might not be lying because we're finding all these planets. So at least some of it should be true. So take a look at it. It's on the Facebook, and we have somebody, Tom, that we haven't talked to in a while, and we've done lots of shows with her, especially in 2011, so
yeah,
you guys can go back and listen to those.
Yeah, we've got Crystal Clark back with us, and those of you who have been, following the show for a while, will know who Crystal is. She has been a very important part of the 100th Monkey Radio, especially in the early years. We absolutely fell in love with her and her work, her energy, and what she's doing and what she's all about. For those of you who are not familiar with her, I'll go ahead and give you the bio because this will give you a good background on who Crystal is. After working for over a decade in both high-end technology solutions and operations management in the logistics field, in 2003, Crystal Clark finally left the corporate profit-driven paradigm due to rank and out-of-control corruption across the board. Being the breadwinner of the family at the time and knowing refusal to continue would financially bankrupt her company, she made several attempts to change careers, later working both in international trade show and medical consulting venues, none of which provided relief from corporate greed and the corruption it generates. Within the same time frame, again due to unbridled corruption, Crystal Clark had already aided the FBI on several occasions when asked, which included testifying in front of a federal grand jury, freely offering extra information on non-related cases that led to arrests and convictions of an NGO misappropriating massive amounts of public funds, and later attempted to work with the Secret Service on another case that taught her just how prolific corruption or ineptitude really is. Prior to her adult corporate careers and endeavors, as a teenager, Crystal Clark became concerned about the environment after she and her family became very sick from drinking well water severely contaminated or poisoned by the local mining company. She later contacted both the EPA and the CDC to report illnesses linked to contaminated water, only to find that while both agencies summarily dismissed her allegations over the phone, they later made very quiet attempts to fence off contaminated areas and build new wells. This was her first introduction to dangerous and rampant corporate greed and corruption, or what is today referred to as profit before people. Leaving the corporate world behind, for good and adjusting her adjusting to exchanging expensive things for personal free time changed her life forever. No longer having the time of her life brought, no longer having the time of her life bought and paid for by a corporation, among other things, she returned to environmental research 20 years later and became even more horrified by what she learned. The outlook was grim, overwhelming even. Her every thought became centered on what to do to stop it. Not long after a period of around 9 months, she began to receive information through dreams that ultimately taught her the past 5 or 6 extinction episodes of the human race were self-caused, and that we are not only currently repeating all the same patterns, but are almost at the end of the line. We have very little time left to avoid the 7th and perhaps final destruction episode. Crystal has consequently become author, philosopher, and co-host of Race with Time Radio in an effort to share what must be done to prevent our own civilization once again being lost to the sands of time. Her first book, finished in 2008 and publicly released in 2009, was recently removed from circulation to make way for a revised and updated version, but because time is short, the updated material, although highly condensed, can be found on her blog for free at www.drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com. Oh, wow, that's a lot of bio. Welcome back to the 100th Monkey Radio, Crystal Clark.
It's good to be back. How are you guys?
Doing great. Doing really good. And I got to say, I have definitely been keeping tabs on you. I'm signed up to all your newsletters. And you've been doing some amazing work out there helping to open people's eyes.
It's really, really important that we do that. Especially where the corruption is concerned, it's important that we out these people to our fellow men and that we show them to be the cheats and liars and thieves that they are, because they aren't just stealing our money, they're stealing our future.
Right.
And they really don't care. So if the people in charge don't care, then we have to care, because that's the only way to counter what they're doing. And and I know that for, you know, I personally have family members who will flat out say, I don't want to know. Whenever this comes up, I just turn my head and I go do something else. And yeah, there are a lot of people out there like that. But I still, even if it's naive, I still believe that most of the people on this planet really are good people and would do the right thing if they knew what it was. Of course, now that's phase one, so you share with people what you know, as well as where it goes if it continues, and you show them how to do that for themselves. Mm. But then, of course, the system that we have in place is really needs to be attacked from so many different angles, because once you know that you're part of it, of course, you also want to try to extricate yourself from it, like I did. That's not doable for a lot of people. I mean, even now you have mothers, single mothers working 3 jobs to feed their children. They can't just stop.
Right.
So those of us who can do something about it, I think really need to carry that
plate.
Yeah, we have to step up to the plate, and we have to do it for the people who can't. And exposure of the lies is really so, so important. You know, I talk a lot about the overpopulation lie, because that is pushed and pushed and pushed for really, really ugly, nefarious reasons. And it really just isn't true. And one of the best sources I've come across lately to really help people kind of surf their way through this one, it's a film, it's on YouTube, and it's called The Lightbulb Conspiracy, and it's about planned obsolescence. Have you guys seen that?
I have not.
No, I haven't.
It's very, very good, and this is completely contrary to the meme that we're constantly spoon-fed, that there are too many of us on the planet and that there aren't enough resources to sustain us, hence overpopulation. But what this film does so brilliantly is it points out that planned obsolescence is the business model that we use all over the globe, and that it actually began in the 1920s. And it's called The Lightbulb Conspiracy. That's the main title of the film, because this was the first product it was done with. And not just that, but it was the first product, it was the first time that a worldwide cartel was established, believe it or not, over a light bulb. And what happened was, in the beginning, light bulbs would last 2,500 hours. And then the corporate greed set in, and they realized, well, we're not going to have customers come back and buy our product on a regular basis if these light bulbs last that long, hence planned obsolescence. So this began in the 1920s when manufacturers began shortening, purposefully shortening, product life to increase demand. And this led to what we now call the consumer society.
Mm. You know,
there was I'll tell you what, there's a light bulb in the very beginning of the video that's been in a fire station and it's been burning nonstop since 1901.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah.
I was going to bring that. I have seen that, and I was aware of the planned obsolescence stuff starting centered around the light bulb. You know, and I've noticed that in my own life, in my own consumeristic habits, you know, the things that I buy, you know, computers is a good example. I mean,
a great example.
Yeah, I mean, because I don't know anybody who has a computer that's over 10 years old. And I'll tell
you. How about over 3 years old?
Yeah, some of the computers that I've put together that 10 years ago, we're good enough to function even today, if they would have been built, you know, without that planned obsolescence added to them. I mean, we all understand that you're constantly having to replace things because they break down or they get buggy. The programming gets all screwed up and irreparable and.
Yeah. I remember my grandfather telling me that back in the early 80s, where he would say, you know, he would buy a machete when he was in his early 20s, and it'd last him into his 50s and 60s. And then now he buys a machete, well, not now, but back then he would buy a machete and it would last him, you know, 2 or 3 years if he was lucky, and it would be all rusted in time for a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things that is a fact of our society right now. And, you know, I would love to see a car that lasted 100 years. Like some of the original stuff that was built, you know, prior to this whole planned obsolescence agenda was put into play, there's stuff that's still on the road today. That was built in the early 1900s. These things were built like tanks, and they were built to last. I mean, Crystal, we have the technology to do that. We have the ability to do that now, don't we?
We do, and that's another very interesting aspect that isn't covered so much in the film, but once people really go down this road and they do really honest research, they discover that there is a second technology that is kept from the public. So we know that the moneyed class and those in power have technology that's way, way far ahead of what we have, and they didn't share it with us when they got it. So we get the slow drip. But this, again, how many resources are we talking about? You know, in this film it talks about, it's really sad, all of these computers and all of these printers and all of these remote controls and phones that we think we're throwing away are actually going to Africa. Africa is being used as a gigantic garbage dump for this stuff because there's nowhere else to put it.
Wow.
So this is really very sad, isn't it? I mean, we're using entire countries for garbage dumps just so corporations can make a profit. And the faster those dumps fill up, the faster their pockets fill up. But they are literally raping the environment to do it. So you have a huge conflict with a business model that constantly refers to infinite growth on a planet with finite resources. And those two things don't go together.
Yeah, I saw something here 4 or 5 months ago about cars, about automobiles that were being overproduced. And I saw some Google Earth shots of these parking lots that were tens of thousands of cars were parked and were staged for demolition, for destruction. Brand new cars, mind you. I mean, brand spanking new cars that they were just going to grind up for the raw materials, or to recycle for raw material. And it's because they're overproducing, just, I guess, to keep the people working or something, I don't know. But it just blew me away. And there were, I'm not exactly sure on how many of these lots that this guy quoted, but there were quite a few of them where, you know, thousands upon thousands upon thousands of cars were just sitting there. And it just blew me away. And what we're doing with our resources and with the products on the planet is a travesty.
It is a travesty, and when we say we aren't talking about you and I. You know, there's a fellow in this movie who says, well, you know, we're not forcing consumerism on people. They don't have to show up and buy things. Well, that's not really true, is it? I mean, if you need an automobile to get to work, or you need a computer to do your job, when it breaks, you have to go buy another one.
Exactly.
And you know, that's not cool. So people really have to look at this and really, in a very, very broad spectrum of world events, this mindset, this microcosm, needs to be applied across the board to so many different things that are happening, because at this point, I'm convinced that the United Nations is the Trojan horse of the New World Order. I think that, of course, its mandate was to prevent war. There have been more wars on this planet than before its inception. And you see everywhere people are being, their perceptions are being managed and manipulated and moved into the direction of, well, we need a global governing body to govern our resources because, you know, us common sheeple aren't intelligent enough to do that, right? So we have to let these other really smart people do it for us. But what we have to understand is that those people are the people that invest heavily in the planned obsolescence model. It is their business model. And we've gotten to a point, we've let this go for so long that now planned obsolescence has jumped from products to people.
Hmm.
And this is very, very important.
Explain that a little bit more, please. How it's jumped from products to people.
Well, of course, you know, historically we know that whenever there's a monarchy or a dictator and they're rotten to their people, they know it's only a matter of time before those people will rise up. It always goes that way. Walter Russell talked about this a lot, just in terms of energy shifts, right? You know, the pendulum will go all the way one way, and then it goes all the way the other way, and we just don't have any balance, and the world that we live in is a direct reflection of that, and it doesn't look so hot right now. So when the people start to become educated and understand their situation, they will rise up, and genocide is always the answer to that. Why would they fix things, right? Because fixing things means giving their power away. Fixing things means taking the power out of the hands of the few. So that can't happen as long as these people are in power, which is very, very important. But the planned obsolescence of people is the new genocide. It's the cruel genocide. We have death panels now, and, you know, you've got Bill Gates out there saying, well, geez, you know, do we want to spend our money on 10 more years of life for granny or 20 new teachers? The Codex Alimentarius, which comes from the World Health Organization, which is the United Nations, they're altering laws for vitamin supplementation, which is doing one of two things across the board. It's either making the vitamins inaccessible to the public over the counter, or the level of vitamin in the supplement is worthless. I mean, you would have to take 100 a day. I mean, it's really bad. So that's part of it. Removing protein from the diet. I know that there are a lot of vegetarians out there that became vegetarians because they don't appreciate cruelty to animals and so forth, but people who really understand the human body and nutrition will understand that there are proteins that you have to have that you can't get anywhere but from animal products. It causes all kinds of problems, mental problems, psychological problems, lower IQ, the inability to think. And, of course, this was kind of presented somewhat in the Hunger Games. And this is the world that we're going to be living in if we get that far. So planned obsolescence is awful. You've got NGOs who went into Africa and gave women what was supposedly a tetanus vaccine. They gave it only to the women, though, and these women later found out that they were sterile and couldn't have children. There was an article that, this was years ago, there was an article that came out just a couple of days ago about the World Health Organization getting caught pushing vaccines that sterilize primates. So that's not good. We know that GMOs sterilize animals, and we also know that there are gene 6 in the contraceptive corn that Monsanto makes. So, and this is the conflict with what comes out of, you know, the television, the mainstream media. Because on the one hand, consume, 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 because that keeps the economy going. That keeps your brother and your cousins and your friends in a job, and then everybody's happy, and we have less crime, and on and on and on. But there are other mechanisms going on here that we really have to recognize.
So I want to share, when you first mentioned the sterilization programs that are going on over in Africa, I heard inside my mind the collective response, the collective reaction, which was, good, there's too many people over there anyways. And the reason I'm bringing this up is a point I want to make about our media. And the way we are taught from childhood, there are certain ideas and certain outlooks on planetary and social things, you know, like the population issues that have been rammed down our throats through our lives from Africa. I mean, what is it? It's Ethiopia is the one that when I was a kid, that was the one, feed the starving children in Ethiopia. Okay. You know, the jokes were going around. How many Ethiopians can you get in a telephone booth? All of them, you know, things like that were embedded within our social structure to create a reaction or a reactive type of, opinion about things that are happening on the planet that support and further these agendas.
You know, when you say that, Tom, that brings up something me and you had discussed a couple of days ago, and, you know, this racial card that's also being thrown out there, and the way it's being played, that even people in our fields, Crystal, that I feel that are very educated and research a lot of these things are even falling for it too as well. You know how the really big one in Europe is that the Muslims are going to completely take over. They're going to breed out all the white people out of Europe. And, you know, it's just, and then you get the ignorance on both sides, because it's just not one side or the other. It's people fall for it on all sides, and they, you know, continue that, well, I hate that group because of this, and not realizing that they're being, you know, their strings are being pulled. And the other thing with the sterilization is I'm shocked how many older couples I know here that just couldn't have babies here in Japan, and how that same thing that, you know, the population is decreasing here at a very high rate.
Yes, that's happening in a lot of places, not just Japan. That's even happening in Israel. But regarding the socially engineered to hate your fellow man because it benefits those in power. Consider this. DC Clothesline put out an article a couple of days ago where it was about an ex-CIA agent who explained that the U.S. helped write the Sharia constitutions in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, you know, and then of course we have the border issue. And when that happened, because once you understand how these people operate through social engineering and perception management, as soon as that happened, I thought, oh, this is not good. They are up to something, and they are up to something big. And everybody was, you know, oh, it's, you know, people just don't like Mexicans. You know, they're trying to race bait people and say, well, it's a racial issue. Protecting the border of your country is not a racial issue. It doesn't matter what color these people are. It doesn't matter if they're green. The infrastructure that we have cannot support a flood of people from another country. It just can't. But aside from that, that's not what's going on. When I saw this happening, I followed it very, very closely because I knew that something was up. You see, it's our job to watch the pieces on the board because that's how they look at it. The world is a giant chessboard, and they're the master chess players, and the rest of us are the little pawns that they move around. And so when it happened, I was telling people, watch this piece of the board. Something very important is going on here. And then when I heard them say, oh, yeah, Al-Qaeda's getting through, they caught 7 of them, I thought, oh, this is it right here. You see, this is opening the collective consciousness not only to accept but to expect terrorism on our own soil. So you see, this is phase 2 of bringing in the New World Order. So we're going to start seeing, if this continues, we are going to start seeing car bombs here in America at movie theaters and grocery stores and malls and casinos. And they're going to say, oh, well, they're already saying it. It's pathetic. I swear sometimes I want to slap the smoke smile off of these people's faces because it's so disgusting. Oh, ISIS is the biggest threat we've ever seen, and they have the funds to wreak all of this havoc all over the world. ISIS is not real. Al-Qaeda is not real. These are, you know, you guys by now, I'm sure, understand the crisis actor, and what Absolutely. They refer to as Duper's Delight. Have you seen that video?
Right, right.
Okay. We have the same thing going on with these mythical terrorists. In fact, it's just as bad, and this has actually been confusing me a little bit, because they're actors. These people are not real. They're actors. And I was actually surprised, because I thought for sure that they had found what used to be termed cell swords, people who would murder, you know, brute force for hire.
Right.
And mercenaries and whatnot. And there is some of that. But these phony beheadings really caught me off guard because it's not beneath these people to kill another human being. I can't understand why they didn't actually kill these people. I'm not saying I want them to, of course
right,
I don't.
Right.
It's just strange. And it almost makes me wonder if some point in the future they're going to bring all this out and say, do you see how gullible and naive and ignorant you are, and why you can't be allowed to run your own affairs, because look at what you fell for. You know, this woman, this other actor, she's supposed to be James Foley's sister. I'm sure you've seen her, but she was also Adam Lanza's classmate.
Right, right.
It's disgusting. There is no ISIS. There is no Al-Qaeda. These are mythical boogeymen that they make up because they caused a problem. And then they say, oh, well, look, only we can save you, but you're going to have to give us another 30% of your paycheck and 50% of what's left of your privacy, and we can do it. You know, how long have they been listening to every phone call and every email? And they're not catching the mafia. They're not catching the pedophile rings, right? They're not catching anybody. It's all theater. It isn't real.
Right.
And people have to get that. It's not real. These people are lying. They're lying. They're not just talking out of both sides of their mouth, but they're lying through their teeth while they do it. But there are, when we say they, this is where people get confused. Well, who is they? Well, it's not that complicated. And this is another really important thing about this film, The Light Bulb Conspiracy, in terms of planned obsolescence, because it does discuss the establishment of the first worldwide cartel. So when we say who is they, cartels are the first thing that we really need to look at. Who are the cartels and what are cartels? And anybody can Google define colon cartel and they'll find a couple of different definitions that will define what a cartel is. But most of the time they're families that run and control a certain aspect of the business world. So here we had a light bulb cartel where they literally ensured that anywhere on the planet everybody was manufacturing crappier light bulbs so that they could make more money. It wasn't just one guy in New York and everybody else, just said, hey, we're not going to do that. It didn't happen like that. We have oil cartels. We have oil families. We have diamond cartels. We have gold cartels. We have technology cartels. We have shipping cartels, transportation cartels. But what really concerns me is now we have what looks like food cartels and water cartels.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can envision the planet really as this gigantic ghetto where all of these gang leaders are trying to carve a niche out for themselves. They're trying to carve out some territory so that they'll have some power and won't be on the bottom of the totem pole. That's what our planet has become. So you have people, you have people that run this trade and that trade, but when you're getting into what sustains a person's ability to survive, this is very, 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 very sneaky and nefarious.
Mm.
Monsanto, I would say at this point, is working overtime to become the food cartel, and so that the only food and the only seed that we will ingest is theirs.
Right.
That's not good. What we have going on in California with the droughts and companies like Nestle has me concerned that Nestle is trying to form a water cartel. At the same time, we even have a weather cartel, for God's sake. This is how the droughts in California happened. And this is another one of those patterns. When they are doing geoengineering, which is weather modification, which is also weather war, you have drought on one side and you have flood on the other. It doesn't matter where they do it, that's the pattern. Here in the United States, we have drought on the west and we have floods in the east. I remember when they were doing it it was crazy. And Russia was on fire and burning to the ground. Pakistan filled up like a bowl full of water.
Right.
That's the pattern. That's how you know. So even though these droughts are being intentionally engineered, you still have companies like Nestle sucking the reservoirs dry, bottling the water, and then selling it back to the people they just stole it from.
Right.
So you see, you can't water your garden when there's a drought. You can't water anything that will sustain you, but Nestle can come and suck the rest out and sell it back to you at a 300% profit. Oh, and by the way, the contaminants in the bottle make it toxic. You see, this kind of mentality has to stop, and we see that corporations are also becoming the cartels. Microsoft, for a very long time, really was the technology cartel. There are people that are trying to combat that now that they understand it. I understand that China is coming out with its own operating systems that may rival Microsoft, and I can't blame them for doing that. I think that's, the way out. There are two ways out. First of all, we do want to extricate ourselves from a system that we know is, that if we continue, if we don't extricate ourselves, then we consciously know that we will continue to participate in our own demise. We don't want to do that. But at the same time, there have to be alternatives. We have to begin to build alternatives. But we live in a world now where if we don't deal with the people in power right now, what happens to people who try to come up with an alternative? They're destroyed. They're murdered. Martin Luther King was murdered. Malcolm X was murdered. John Lennon was murdered. And these people weren't even competition in the business world. They were competition in the mind world.
Right.
You see, just the idea world. People who tried to come up with cars that run on water, other things, they're destroyed. So if we want to change what's happening on this planet, we have to go after the people that stand in the way of change, and these are the cartels.
Right.
They have to be dealt with. There were laws and rules and regulations that prevented this kind of thing, that prevented monopolies. Those were overturned. They shouldn't have been. Things were deregulated. That can't happen anymore. That has to stop. And then the other problem that we have is we have the Zionist issue. And this has been, this is not an issue that I focused on initially in the beginning, because it was the what. You know, it's kind of that same, the same steps that Michael Murphy took with his films, you know, what in the world are they spraying, and then why, and then you get to the who. Eventually you have to get to the who if you want to stop it. And the Zionist situation is really, really out of control. I saw a list of how many people in Congress have dual citizenship, and I about fell over. It's long. It's very long. Yeah, very long. And I'm not going to get into this facet of it too much today. We can talk about it again later after I write the article. I'm going to write a very extensive article on, it's a 6-hour documentary, which I know is long. But I will tell you, this is one of the most important 6 hours of my life, watching this. And it's called Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. We have been lied to about who he was, what he did, why he did it. And of course, we're getting to a point where we understand that the, quote, winners write history. And in doing so, rewrite our reality. They are literally rewriting the framework of our reality. But I was shocked. I just, you know, I hope you'll pardon the expression, but these people really have some balls. You would be shocked at how bad the lies are, how far back it goes. It covers everything. There is a speech that Hitler made, and an associate of ours who's German, his name is Schuny, I did have him ensure, you know, listen to it and ensure that the subtitles are accurate and that what it says Hitler said is really what he said in the speech. So I did have someone check that out. It's accurate. If you were not told that this was Hitler making this speech, and you were asked, who do you think it was? It would be any number of people that you know today that you would think was making the speech. These people are not truly Jewish. And that's really important to point out. Zionists are not really Jewish.
Right.
So it's not a Jewish thing. I'm not anti-Semitic, and I'm not going to tolerate anybody who says that I am, because that's a cop-out. You know, that's the, well, let's call someone names instead of deal with the facts. That ship has sailed. He explains that his country, and not just his country, Russia also, he explains that his country was infiltrated. Their art, their literature, their newspapers, their magazines, their education, their positions of power, banking, all of it was infiltrated, and he was trying to take it back.
Sounds an awful lot like John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, I will tell you honestly that after sitting through this, and I've watched it more than once because it's just so mind-blowing, that if people knew the truth about what happened and why all of it happened, and who all the players were, and how, and who the backstabbers really were, and what was really going on, I think a lot of people would come away with the feeling that I had, was that, in fact, he was one of the greatest leaders to ever walk the face of this earth, which was why they did what they did, in terms of trying to completely remove him from our history in any positive light whatsoever.
That's the perception management.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. So, it's shocking.
So within perception management, do you think there's an intentional focus upon our own creative abilities as far as, you know, the way this universe works? I know that, you know, let's just look at the whole manifestation process, right? How we bring things into our lives, you know, the secret, right? The programs that are out there, the perception management programs, let's take the border thing, for example. you know, Al-Qaeda's coming into America, blah, 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 blah. You know,
ISIS has a camp there.
Right, but there, do you think that there's an intentional and conscious attempt by these cartels to have us create this for them just by their act of that perception management?
Well, it's very, very true. Our ignorance is their power. So are we building their infrastructure and maintaining it? Absolutely, through our ignorance. And then once we become educated, it will continue through our inaction. So first we have to get educated properly, and then we have to become active. But that's absolutely right. If you know, there's an article I wrote some time ago on my blog called The Winners Write History. And it goes through these four walls of our reality box that we have. And this little tiny box is what we are allowed to operate within. These parameters weren't set by you and I. Most of the people on the face of this earth don't even know about these parameters, but yet will be punished severely if they operate outside of them, and in fact have then managed their perceptions and emotions and thoughts have been managed to a degree where they won't even try anymore because they've seen what happens to others. Now they haven't asked themselves, well, why does this happen? Because, of course, we have the other angle of the perception management, which is the spin, right? They come on television and they say, oh, yeah, this person was really, really bad. They had weapons of mass destruction, so we had to kill him.
Some
you know,
people say.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, people just do not know the truth. And if they did, they would be appalled. Every cell in their body would reject it,
right,
if they knew, but which is why they don't know.
Some things that really throw flags up for me when I do happen to listen to any major media is those comments of some people say or experts say, or you know, they don't give a direct source. They just kind of put out a generic source, and then out comes the propaganda. You know, almost every single one of those types of stories that I've heard have all had, I've seen the agenda within their opinion. You know, so it's just amazing the way that the media has been taken over and the way people swallow it up. I mean, that's what blows me away more than anything else is how gullible the masses are. You know, frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And it's always this giant circular reference back to what they want you to think.
Right.
And there were really spectacular examples of this during the Iraq War, when Dick Cheney would go on shows like Meet the Press, and he would say, well, sources in the Washington Post said that, you know, he would cite these sources in the Washington Post, but what people didn't find out until after we killed millions of people for no good reason is that he and his cronies put those sources in the Washington Post.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So the same thing is happening. And this is the thing. Once you understand how they operate, you can actually predict what they're going to do next with certainty because they never change. You know, a tiger doesn't change its stripes.
Right.
And I think that's really, really important. The other thing that I'm very concerned about, which I don't know, how much time do we have left? Because this can go by fast.
We've got about 10 minutes in this first segment.
Okay. One thing that I've been very concerned about, because I knew it was coming because of the patterns, you know, A and B, pretty soon you have C and D, that's the way it works. I've been very concerned about something I termed catastrophic biosphere and biodiversity collapse. I'm not concerned about it coming anymore because it's here. It's happening. And this is very, very, very bad. The Pacific Ocean is dead. It's dead. Now, I know that there are varied estimates, we can call them guesstimates, about how much of our planet is water. Let's just go with 80%. Half of that's dead now. This is very, very bad. I mean, I feel stupid really saying it's very, very bad. There aren't words to express
right. How
it's catastrophic. That's how bad it is. It's dead. 33 tons of dead fish just washed up in Mexico. One of their big lakes turned red. This is not a good situation. There's nothing alive. The animals are beaching themselves. They've got sores. The birds aren't mating. There is a group of folks. Now, this is just people like us, because we are beginning to understand if anybody's going to fix it, we are. We're the only ones that are going to fix it, who are going up and down the West Coast looking for signs of life and reporting back what they're finding, and they aren't finding any. They aren't finding birds. They aren't finding mollusks. They aren't finding fish. They aren't finding crabs. There's just nothing. Wow. Now, the oceans are connected.
Right.
And the ocean is also, it's like this giant, well, it's a biosphere, for crying out loud. So it
symbiotic.
Yes, it's like this, it's, you know, the water goes up, it comes back down, you know. The ocean is a huge air purifier, and it also provides oxygen. Where is the oxygen going to come from if there's nothing living?
Right.
And then we have to look at what caused it. Well, we know that there's been a problem for a while with, you know, the island of garbage the size of Texas and some other things.
Yeah.
But Fukushima is what caused this.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Fukushima.
It's one of the major ones. That you also have the, that it was never in any of the major media, was the huge oil spill. I think it was off the coast of Somalia.
There have been many oil spills, and they're never in the media here if they can't be seen here.
Right.
That's the way they operate. This is what they refer to as compartmentalization, right? And this is why they hate the internet, because they can't tell us one thing over here and one thing over there, because we're talking to each other and going, hey, well, that's not what they told me. Something's wrong. This, I think, is why you're seeing certain countries ban material, because we're talking. We can't have that. But the Fukushima problem is, it's a huge, huge disaster. And are you guys familiar with China syndrome? Do you know what that
is? Oh, yeah. It just totally blows me away that we haven't stopped that. I mean,
they're not even telling
me
about it.
We have the ability and the technology to have taken care of that immediately. Within weeks.
We could have in the beginning contained it, because, and we know that because it was done at Chernobyl.
Right.
Okay. So a lot of really strange things were happening now. James Horak, who I know you're familiar with, who's a friend and colleague of mine, was talking for a long time about China syndrome and how these cores would eventually reach the mantle of the Earth. Last year, I think it was, maybe earlier this year, people like Dutch Sins and others who record, you know, geological changes on the planet noticed earthquakes 350 miles deep. This is unheard of, okay? When people were researching HARP in the early days, one of the ways, because they were looking for ways to determine if the earthquake was caused by HARP, what patterns do we look for? And a lot of people found out that generally, if it was HARP-induced, the earthquakes were only 5 miles deep.
Right.
5 miles.
Right.
Consistently, all the time, even the one that destroyed, was it Jamaica?
Haiti.
Haiti, sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that was only five miles deep.
Which the president of Venezuela came out and said it. And,
that's right.
And everybody was like, oh, he's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, and then you got thyroid cancer. How convenient is that?
No.
So, in fact, there's a, I think it's a woman who's done a story about all of the Latin American leaders who've gotten cancer
right.
out of nowhere, which is interesting. But, okay, so earthquakes that are 350 miles deep is unheard of. And that is an indicator that the cores have reached the mantle of the Earth.
Yeah.
James and I did a show on this when it was happening. And we did a show back in July, I think it was in the middle of July, with Ohio Exopolitics, where James explained that because of what's happened, we're going to start seeing fissures open up in the earth now. And there have been two significant ones, and it's only been a month. And one was in Arizona, and one was in Mexico. And, of course, we're seeing all the volcanic activity all over the planet because, the way the dynamics of the planet work, we've disturbed the balance. And so what do we do now? I mean, and this is what, I mean, we are in such a pickle because for 50, 60 years, we've been led to believe that, well, there might be life elsewhere, but if there is, it's bad. It's really bad. They're going to come and get us. It's the space data, okay?
Yeah.
But there is no evidence of that. There is none. There is absolutely none. There's story after story after story, but no evidence. And people get, and this is the social engineering and the perception management, and it's opinion forming. So people will take Star Trek and then extrapolate from that the entire universe must operate that way, or Star Wars. When was the last time you saw a planet destroyed by a laser beam and aliens fighting? It doesn't happen. And one of the reasons that James's explanations made so much sense to me is, for years I've tried to explain that what we refer to as nature is the technology. People don't stop to consider. They're not invited to stop to consider because it would raise too many questions. That we live in a solar system of these giant balls hanging in what we think is nothing. They're just hanging there. And not actually not even just hanging there, but they're moving. They have this dance that they do, and it's always the same. But there's no strings, and there's no batteries, and there's no rockets. So when you get to a point where you understand how that works and you can model it and you can duplicate it, then you have star travel. Not the crap that NASA feeds us where everything has a rocket on the end of it. That's absurd. It's absurd. Don't get me started on that. It just really, really irritates me.
Oh, man, that frustrates the hell out of me.
Yeah.
It's that, yeah, right. It's just so pathetic. And that's another way that they keep people trapped in the box. They don't ever wants you to consider possibilities outside of what they repeatedly feed you. You see how that works. So we get the same crap over and over. So once you have achieved star travel,
SETI is another one.
I'm sorry?
SETI is another one that's just as bad as NASA.
Oh, SETI is awful. And this is another form of entrainment where they constantly use films and even cartoons to help form your opinion of what an organization like SETI does. Well, they point to these big satellites in space and wait for somebody to talk back. That is not what SETI does. Kevin Smith, when he was alive, did this wonderful show about this doctor. His name was Dr. Rodney Gomez, and how he was attending this presentation, Dr. Rodney Gomez, during this presentation, got up and said that there are more planets in our solar system than we've been told about, which I've been waiting for someone to say for a very long time because I've come across this before. After he said that, they removed all trace of him having been at this presentation, at the seminar, on their website, which is how they rewrite history and rewrite the framework of our reality, right?
Right.
But Kevin Smith was an awesome investigator, and he found links to National Geographic journalists who were there and quoted him in their magazine.
Oh, nice.
To prove that he was there. All of this about SETI and who they are and the history of cosmology and space and all of this, there's a very, very good in-depth article about this on my website on the cosmology tab that goes into all of this. And so I started digging because Kevin Smith had the link to the website of where the conference was held, the hotel it was at, and everything. So I saw that there were a lot of members from SETI there. So I started doing a little digging, and I was looking at their titles. And some of these people are dealing with multiple moon systems. That is so far beyond radio signals, it's frightening. And not only that, but Kevin Smith went into how SETI has set protocols for whether or not they're going to divulge to the people on this planet how many planets are actually in their solar system. And the protocols are based on whether or not there's life on those planets. So if they know that there's intelligent life on those planets, they're not going to tell you that planet is in your solar system. And what people need to extrapolate from that is, if you couldn't see the moon, and these people formed this little club before the rest of us got wind that there was a moon, you wouldn't know you had one.
Right.
That's how sickening it is.
Right. Well, yeah. Crystal, we might as well wrap this first hour up. There's, you know, we're definitely going to keep going on this track in the second hour, guys. And we also want to look at some of the solutions, what we can do as the everyday Joe out here trying to do the best and highest good for themselves and their family and their friends and the rest of the world. You know, what can we do as normal people? And we'll move forward from there. This is some important stuff, guys. You know, we've done a few shows here recently that brought up some of these issues on the planet, which I want to ask you about a little bit of the geoengineering stuff too, Crystal. We had Dane Wigington on here recently, and the methane release is pretty soon right now. Get your opinion and what you know on that. Also, we'll start the next hour off at that. So anyways, guys, drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com or drowninginabsurdity.org, was it, Crystal?
Yeah, either one will get you there.
Okay, there you go. Links are on the webpage here, and if you guys are listening out on one of those other medias, the Vimos, the YouTubes, the iTunes, wherever else it may end up, and you want to check out Hour 2, pop on over to www.thehundredthmonkeyradio.com, and all the information there is there to become a member of the 100th Monkey Radio and have access to all that fantastic and informative second-hour material that we put out there. All right, well, we'll see you guys in the second hour. Condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance.
The love you deny is the pain you carry.
Namaste.
Trying to reach you, check yourself in. Pick up the call. You gotta pick up the call. We came to sing with the very next day. The words they just kept on coming through. Cause you can see if you believe me, this is what you really want to do. Go. you see, it's complicated. It's really all quite simple in the end. You got the truth, you're in a beer, not a beer. You got the lectures, you're in a song, not a beer. There's a thousand, thousand minds of matter. Now, if you don't know which time to have, it's just a part of the matter. And don't you know, there's just one door. I got to look yourself right in the eye. There's a magic moment trying to meet you. An urgent message trying to reach you. The phone is ringing off the wall. So pick up the card. You gotta pick up the card. Pick up the card.